Welcome to Movie Dudes, episode 103. I am Jeff, joined as always by Chris.
Yo.
We saw some new stuff, some semi-new stuff, and we're going to kick it all off with La La Land, which is a new movie from the director of Whiplash. It stars Ryan Gosling and Emma Stone as two young, creative people living in L.A., chasing their dreams and falling in love. And a little different from Whiplash. It's more of a straight musical, and it is, I think, fucking wonderful and just like a delightful movie. Like, I think my initial reaction was, it's just, that was a pure joy. Like, I was so happy I finally got to see it in the theaters. I think it is worth going to the theater to see and singing with a crowd. It seemed like the crowd I was with was really enjoying it. The opening scene got applause from like one girl in our row. She's like kind of timid. She like tried to get it started and it didn't go. Like, she was the only one. But I felt it. I felt her. I was like, yeah. Way to go, girl. And then at the end of the movie, like, when she started again, I just started clapping real loud, and like the whole crowd went with it, and everyone started clapping. I was like, yes, people were feeling this movie. At least it seemed that way. I was sitting there like for like the first half hour of this movie, just like beaming. Like, I thought my fucking heart was gonna explode out of my chest with joy. Like, it was just the first couple musical numbers in this movie, I think, are just great, and it's been stuck in my head for days. Since I've been actually been listening to the soundtrack over and over on YouTube, I'm not a musical person really. Like, I can't even name you any really musicals I've seen other than once and like the Disney movies, you know, like the, you know, Disney animated features.
Sure. I mean, Wizard of Oz,
Mary Poppins, and stuff.
Mary Poppins, yeah.
But you know. It's been a while, and
Annie.
I think part of it could be that maybe, you know, it's not a genre that is like super popular right now. Like, yeah, there's always a couple music movies every year, probably, but
well,
I don't see them.
This is, and we'll probably get into it as we talk more about it. But this isn't like it takes place in modern times. People use cell phones. They drive cars. But it is really a golden age Hollywood film. Like, this is a classic,
yeah,
Hollywood film. Like, it's not trying to. And this one of the themes, I guess, that is kind of brought up. But it's not trying to reinvent the wheel. Like, this is a straight classic golden age musical.
Yeah, and you know what? We could get into that, because there is an interesting conversation at one point in the movie between Ryan Gosling and John Legend.
Yeah.
It makes you think, like, okay, well, what are you trying to say here? It feels like a 1940s musical. Like, it, but yeah, it takes place in modern day. People have cell phones. They drive Priuses.
Yeah, but there's a funny Prius joke.
Yes. But that said, like, you know, it's got like a retro look to it, and the music feels like the old, grand, like, awesome musical music. Like, holy crap, dude. I don't know how you feel, like, about the first two songs. Like, the first song is, you know, I'm sure you remember, is on the freeway. Mm-hmm. People getting out of their cars. But then there's another one, and it's, like, very early on, it's, like, my favorite scene in the whole movie is when Emma Stone is being convinced to go out by her friends, like, to go to a party, and they start singing the song called Someone in the Crowd, and oh my god, I loved it. Like, I was just overjoyed by it. Like, I said, this is not my jam, dude. Like, I was just like, I mean, maybe, I think part of it is I really like Emma Stone.
Sure.
I also, you know, I like Ryan Gosling as well, but I think the music's great. Like, just fantastic. I mean, if I had one real complaint about the movie, is there's not enough. Like, I wanted more music in it. Like, I wanted more music numbers like the one where she's getting ready to go out to the party. It does, as it goes on, it kind of leans too heavily on the song that you'll hear in the trailer, which is City of Stars, kind of uses that little like too much, like too many times, or what I would have liked a few more. Like, there are still stuff, like, you know, near the end, she does the Dreamers song, and there definitely are other songs. But, it's like, that's probably, like, the only, like, chink in its armor that I really have. It's like, probably the only problem I have with it. Otherwise, I adored this movie. It's an adorable movie.
I'm mostly Chris. On this. So I'm gonna break your heart here, but I'm gonna go fully on. Like, this movie is powered by the kind of chemistry and charisma of both Gosling and Stone. Like, they are perfect together in this movie.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree with that.
But I'm gonna break. I dislike the first two numbers. I didn't dislike really? The movie. Yeah, I did. Like, I was like, I don't know. Like, that first number seemed like it was, like, it definitely was like this kind of like modern take on that golden age type musical thing. But the song just didn't. It was like Sunshine or something.
Another Day of Sun.
Yeah, no, like I don't know. Like the music, like the chorus, like nothing grabbed me. It wasn't like, oh yeah, like it was kind of like a fun upbeat song. There was this weird parkour guy jumping all over the place. Like, it was really weird because, like, at the end, he's like, everybody else is like kind of, you know, doing their thing by their cars and getting ready to get in, and he is just like weirdly parkouring down like the side of the freeway. It was really strange, and that was something that like really stuck out, because the song didn't click with me. And then that next song, which I thought was better, the one where she's getting dressed, I'm kind of being like, I wanted to text you after I left the movies of like, I just want, like, just give me Emma Stone in sweatpants all the time. Yeah. Like, I'll take her in sweatpants any day. I mean, she's beautiful no matter what, but and talented, and like, yeah, she's fantastic singing in this. Yeah, that one didn't really drive me either, and it wasn't until like that. In fact, that first section of winter, it wasn't until spring when she meets up with him again.
When they do the little number by the park bench.
Well, even before that, she runs into him at the party. But yeah, right before that, when she runs into the party and like,
the 80s cover band.
Yeah, he's in like the 80s cover band, and she requests Iran, and like that whole bit right there was like, all right, I'm on board now. It finally hooked me. I got, and then they do the dance number, the song and dance number, as like they're walking to her car, and I was like, yeah. And you were kind of like, you said your chink for it is that they rely too heavily on that theme that I think it's in the trailer, but it's the one they play right at the end. Like, it's I think you know the name of it actually.
The City of Stars, the one that like they do a duet of at one point. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, they do it a couple times. Like, it's in the movie a bunch.
Yeah, it's like reprised a bunch of times. Like, I love that. Like, that was
okay.
Every time that like, and I mean, it's more of a slower piano driven song, which I definitely have a like soft spot for piano music. So that was the part that I really liked, and I enjoyed the movie overall. Started a little slow for me, but it did eventually hook me.
That's so funny because like going into it, I had not heard any of the music outside of the song that's in the trailer, to City of Stars, this little piano song. And I really dug that song. But like, I think it's like the weakest one. Like, I don't know. I didn't have any expectations for what type of music was going to be in it. Like, I had not spoiled myself on that. And I was just kind of like, wow, they're really going for it here. Like, right off the bat, when they did that number right at the beginning, I was like,
yeah, cool. I will say that, like, as a musical, after those first, like, three numbers that probably take place in the first, like, third of the movie, it then slows down a lot. Like, there are a couple, but not as, like, it really, there's a lot more instrumental stuff. There's some more dancing.
Yeah.
But it doesn't lean heavily on the song and dance aspect of it anymore. I think it's fine.
it's kind of disappointing to me. And like, I'm saying that as someone that like, I've never had any sort of like affinity for musicals. It was just, I was like, okay, I respected right away where they're going. They hooked me in with it right away with those first two numbers. And I think if once you hear them a couple times, Chris, like, I don't know if you're gonna listen to the soundtrack again or watch the movie again. I think you'll appreciate them more. Like, they're super fucking catchy. And like, the one where she's like getting ready to go to the party and stuff, it like really slows down and it like slowly builds up again. It's like, dude, dude. Do do do. Like I start, like it slowly builds up to get really loud again.
Oh yeah, like
Fucking like,
well, and I thought that was a used to great effect in the movie, because when it slows down in the
yes.
movie, it's like she's kind of feeling out of place at this party that she was convinced to go to, and she wants to leave it. And then when it builds up, like she's kind of taken out of it, and it like people are jumping in the pool, and there's like shit going on
Yes.
all around. It's like, it's a wonderful piece of cinematography, like right there. It's just like regardless of how anybody feels about the song, the music is used so well in conjunction
Yes.
with it.
Like I remember specifically like the way it was timed to that one person like jumping into the water.
Yeah.
Like it just brought that movie to life. Like I don't know. So like for me, I was like hooked in big time right off the bat. Like I really like not coming from a place of like I'm not a fan of these like of the old musicals, but like I respected 100% right away where Damien Chazelle was going with this and the commitment to it. And then I was like a little bummed that there wasn't more of that. But I really, dude, that's about all I could say bad about it. Like, there's I guess some slightly spoilery things that we could discuss, but like I thought it does slow down a bit. There is a little bit like less musical numbers as it goes on. But I did think that they pulled it off in the end. And they stuck the landing on it. Like I think, like I dug like the ending into
The
the
ending
movie.
is beautiful.
Yeah. Okay. Cool.
I like just the way that all, like, and I don't
They
want to
could have
really
blown it.
spoil
They could
it.
have blown it so
Oh
bad in
yeah,
so
it
many different
could have
ways.
gone so bad. But it works, like,
Yeah.
and it's a bittersweet ending. Like, it's
It's interesting. Like it's a movie that like it does not ask much of you. It's not like challenging you. It's a
no.
fun musical.
Right.
But it leaves you with an ending where you could be walking out going, so is that a happy ending or a sad ending? Like you said, it's kind of bittersweet. It's kind of both. But like,
Yeah.
where you fall on it will, I mostly looked at it as like, oh, that's overall it looks like things worked out, But
Right, like it, like, and there's a conversation they have right before all that happens. That
yeah,
leads into that,
sets it all up.
that allows that ending to work that way.
And that sequence is just beautiful. When I mean, I don't want to get into spoilers, but you know what I'm talking about, where it goes kind of through this montage,
Oh yeah,
and
like
I'm just
it's
like, wow, like I kind of like called where it was going with that, but I was like, still like, great, this is amazing, like, well done.
yeah, we're gonna have to talk, like, not during the show, like
Yeah.
off, because I really think that, like, to get the full effect, you kind of need to watch it without any spoilers, and
Absolutely, yeah.
because the ending is really like everything that movie builds up to, and it works. Like that's really
Yes.
why it plays.
Yeah, I don't want to spoil it. I don't even really want to talk spoilers. I kind of want to encourage people to like go see this one. Like, and like I said, like yeah, you can wait to see it on video and it'll be fine. You'll still like it probably. But like, there was something magical about like. First off, I drove 30-something miles to go see it. And then I'm walking into this theater in a mall like that's dead. Like literally, I would say like 80% of this like stores in this mall are permanently closed. And so I'm walking in the theater, and also we walk into our auditorium. It's full. Like, and there's like a girl like directing you like, oh, there's seats over there. There's a couple seats over there. And I was like, holy shit, dude! People are coming out to see this. So I guess that's why, I mean, apparently I read earlier on Twitter that it's expanding to like over 1,000 screens tomorrow. Like it's doing business. It's got positive word of mouth. People are showing up for it, which is good. Because I guess one final thing I'll say, like on that front, is like, dude, this thing is not my personal favorite movie of the year. It's pretty high up there. But I would be surprised if anything could topple this goddamn movie come Oscar time. Like, it's just an undeniable force. Like,
it's a celebration of movies, of classic movies. Like even if
the Academy loves.
Yeah, like it's really is that. But I mean, I think it's just this. Outside of that, like outside of awards, like it's well worth seeing. Like it's
yeah,
very good.
Yeah, even if you're not a musical fan, like I said, I'm not, and I ended up loving the music in it. I'm probably gonna end up getting the soundtrack at some point. I might even buy it on Blu-ray. Like I wanted to see this movie because it was gonna be a big awards movie, and because I liked the stars, and because I liked the director. But like, I was not expecting to like love it, and I kind of loved it. So. Yeah, I guess one more thing on that. Have you seen Whiplash yet?
I have not.
Are you going to be seeing Whiplash now that you've seen this movie?
I will try and make time for it, certainly.
Here's what I will say about Whiplash. It is it's a very different movie than La La Land. It is also a better movie, in my opinion, and it is also... There is some strands of DNA between the two. I mean, obviously, J.K. Simmons was in La La Land as well as Whiplash.
Yeah.
And they're both movies that, to some degree, are about jazz and the love of jazz. Because Gosling's character, he wants to own a jazz club and he wants jazz music to be popular again. Like, he thinks people like kind of ignore it and it's dying because of that, even though it's great American music. And I mean, Whiplash is kind of all about this kid that wants to be a great jazz drummer. And David Chazelle is like 2 for 2. Like, honestly, I think he's made 2 of the top 10 movies of the last decade. Like, holy shit. So I don't know what he's going to do next. If it's going to be related to jazz or not, I'd be perfectly fine if they're as good as his first 2 movies. I guess he had one movie before that, but it was more of a basically almost like a student film.
His next movie is about Neil Armstrong.
Weird. Right? I don't know. I mean, this guy's track record is like, it's up there with like the greats, like in my lifetime, and like, you know, that I've seen happen. It's like up there with Tarantino. Like, I'm just like, this guy has done no wrong so far. So,
and Gosling is cast to be Neil Armstrong in that movie. So,
interesting. I mean, Gosling, I mean, I like the guy. Like,
he's great.
He's done. He has a pretty good track record of picking out projects. Like, he's in 2 of my favorite movies of 2016. So, yeah, I don't know. I if it were me, just me, I would say this is 4.5 out of 5. I'm gonna give it the full 5 because of where it's gonna end up placing on my list. I'd feel weird about it placing above movies I rated higher or whatever. So. I'm giving it the 5. I think it earns that.
I'm going to go 4, and my list already compiled, so I don't know exactly where to dropped it in, but also saw it now, so didn't get out to see it in 2016. And but yeah
you didn't think about how it would disrupt your list at all.
No, I mean, it really, like, there's so many other movies I still want to see, like. If I really just stopped and was like, all right, I'm not gonna make my list till I see this, and there'll always be another movie like from that year. So
of course,
I wanted to have it wrapped up by New Year's Eve, which, I mean, that's 365 days. Like,
yeah, right.
I'm going with a 4, but it's an excellent movie. Well worth seeing. So.
Yeah, and as far as our top tens go, how do you feel about doing our show next episode?
We could do that. That's fine.
All right, that's what's coming, folks. It did disrupt my. I had like a preliminary top 10. It disrupted mine. It knocked off one of my favorites, I'm at the point now where I want to get this year, like this top 10 list and like best of the year show done. Because there's nothing I could cut from this list anymore. Like, if something better comes on, I would feel terrible cutting some of the other
Yeah, I
stuff
mean,
on there. I'm like, fuck.
at some point, like, we just got to lock it in, right? Like, I mean, it's an arbitrary list anyway, like, but it's just fun to do. Like, let's recap some of the movies we liked from last year, so.
Possibly related note, you went and saw Sing, which sounds like it has music in it based on the title.
It's a musical animated movie. It's by Illumination. They're the people behind Despicable Me, and I think
Oh
a couple of
no.
those. Which I mean, Despicable Me is fine. I'm not a fan of the Minions necessarily, but this is fine. The previews kind of made it out to be like an American Idol type thing, where these anthropomorphic people would be competing in a singing competition. It's a little bit different than that. Like, there's a competition involved. Matthew McConaughey plays this koala who runs a theater that's kind of down on its luck, and his secretary accidentally puts too many zeros on his flyer, and puts out $100,000 like prize money for this competition that he's trying to set up at his theater. And it kind of goes through all of that as you meet up with these characters that are trying to compete for the money, and they all have different storylines. There's like an elephant who's shy. There's a pig who is like, she's a mom of like 25 piglets, and there's this gorilla who's like part of a gang that his dad runs, but he doesn't want to be in it because he wants to be a singer. Like, it's shit like that. Most of those characters are fun. They mostly sing like pop music from today. Pop, like, there's a one who does like Sinatra type music, who I found annoying. The character himself was like an asshole. The music itself is fine. It's
I
just
was gonna
the
say, you don't like
character's an asshole. No,
Sinatra?
the music was fine. It's just the character's kind of like this almost like, I mean, probably what you would expect Sinatra, I guess, to be like a 50s era, almost like he comes off as like he should be in the mafia, but he's not. Like, when you hear some of the stories of like Sinatra and the Rat Pack, maybe comes off a little bit like that. The movie is like, I'm honestly drawing a blank on like a lot of it. Like the music was fine, the characters were fine, but nothing like theirs like jumping out of me and blowing me away. It's just a perfectly fine, cute animated movie. Like, if you're looking for something to take your kids to, and you've haven't seen Moana, or you have seen Moana, or whatever else is out there now, this is
If
perfectly
mana
fine.
is not an option, sing is passable.
Yes, yeah, sing is passable. Like, in fact, your kids probably like, they'll know the music to this, so that may be like a point in its favor, because like, they play some pretty standard, like there's some Taylor Swift in there, or some Katy Perry, they're like shit like that. So, not saying that that music's shit.
No, I mean I enjoy pop music as well,
Right.
so whatever. It doesn't
It's like,
sound like I'd be rushing to see this
no,
stuff.
there's a this the cast is fucking amazing. Matthew McConaughey, Reese Witherspoon, Seth MacFarlane, Scarlett Johansson, John C. Reilly, Jennifer Hudson. Like, it's a great cast, but like they don't do anything with them. Like, it's not like these people needed to be in it. They could have found just about anybody to do these characters. So, it's perfectly fine. I'm gonna go with a 3. It's a passable, kind of, serviceable animated fare.
Yeah, which almost makes me feel bad about like having how I rated Kubo, which I think that's like my same reaction to Kubo. And I've been hearing some year end lists and people are like, dude, I heard people give Kubo number one. I was like,
yeah,
I didn't see it. I don't see that in that movie. It's, I appreciate the work they put into it, but like, I don't know.
Yeah, like Kubo is a wonderfully crafted movie, but there's nothing about it that screams special to me. It's like, when we had that conversation last week, there was just nothing about it. Like, the same thing, like, I remember bits and pieces of that movie, but I've already, like, flushed most of it away.
It's just because of the craftsmanship behind it. Like, I feel bad lumping it, like, you know, that in with a movie like Sing, which I have not seen Sing. I'm not, like, trying to trash Sing, but
right.
It sounds to me like it's just okay. Which I guess that was my reaction to Kubo, but I feel bad about it.
Like, like, oh, they like, I mean, like, yes, they put so much time and effort into it, but ultimately, Kubo, for me at least, came out just okay. So.
Yeah. Anyways, not to turn to Kubo again.
What do you got? What else you been seeing?
All right, well, I've only seen, like, I saw La La Land, and I've seen a couple movies the last 2 days of them sitting here from Netflix. One of them is showing up on top 10 lists, and, you know, some people really like, some critics really responded to, and that is American Honey.
Yeah, I've heard about this one.
Yeah. It's, like I told you, like, I think I said last week, it's like a 3-hour movie that looks like it was shot on an iPhone.
Yes.
It might have been shot on an iPhone. I don't know, but it's in standard aspect ratio, which is like, I don't get.
That's weird.
And I understand why they did it for that foreign film from last year, Son of Saul.
Mm-hmm.
To make you feel like you're like boxed in, like you're a prisoner, like the people in the movie. And I don't find it excusable. We don't watch stuff on square boxes anymore. We watch it on widescreen. So I don't like seeing all that real estate being wasted. So it has that against it. It's also not 3 hours, but it is 2 hours and 42 minutes.
That's
and, long. And it feels like a documentary, like a type of documentary where they like follow the subject around, you know, not like a talking head documentary where people are sitting there giving interviews, right, but like, hey, we're going to follow this group of people around. And it follows this girl named Star, an actress.
Sasha Lane.
Yeah. And she's pretty good. And she comes from a poor community, I want to say in like Oklahoma or something, somewhere like in the South and Midwest, middle of fucking nowhere America. And you see a lot of that in this movie, like just traveling around the South and like the Midwest and like Kansas City and shit like that. Yeah, so it follows this girl who she kind of like runs away from home. She's like 18 years old, so I don't know if it's running away, but she kind of just disappears. Like she books it on her family, and she joins like this group of people who drive around in a van selling magazines, and a business which seems very sketchy to say the least.
Yeah.
And a business which, like, my girlfriend informed me as we were watching it is real. Like, it's a real thing that her sister did for a while.
Huh.
And made no money and had to call her mom to get back home when she was like out west of California or some shit with no money. So that's what it is. Like, she gets like sucked in with this group of like young people, and learning the ropes of selling magazines, which, like, dude, it's like a beyond sketchy business where, like,
I bet
you don't really like, yeah, like you just like they kind of roll up in towns, drop people, like, you know, they have a big van full of like 16 people. They'll drive through an area, drop two people off at a time, drive a little further, drop another two people off. These people just canvass the neighborhood, going door to door, selling magazines, and it's like
subscriptions, I guess.
Yes, but like, do these people ever get their subscriptions? I don't know. Like,
right,
that's
right.
How sketchy they made it seem. And the people that, you know, she's hanging around with, they're all, you know, they're young people, but like a specific group of, like, you know, they're poor kids, mostly seem like delinquents and, you know, have problems and drug problems, etc. Like, you know, real sketchy crowd, kind of, you know, kind of people I used to hang around with when I was in high school. And it reminds me because of that, because of like the way it's kind of shot and the characters that we have in it. It reminds me of a Larry Clark film, like Kids or Bully, okay, or even kind of like in the same vein, like Alpha Dog. It's like troubled kids. Although some of those movies were rich kids who thought it was cool to act like gangsters or whatever. These are like the real deal. Like they're just poor kids from the middle of fucking nowhere who are just trying to do something with their lives. Not much of a plan. Like it's mostly just hedonistic driving around the country, fucking each other, doing drugs, and they going trying to raise money, most of which goes to this girl that's running them, who kind of acts as their pimp. It's interesting. Like it's all to take a look at, and it's a type, like it's a side of America show often. Like it does not show people who live in Nebraska or wherever, like often. And it feels like I feel like people that I knew and was happy to not know anymore. Like, like, you know, it feels real. It's interesting through a lot of it. Like, you're kind of like, what's up with this girl? What's up with these people? She has a love interest played by Shia LaBeouf, ace salesman among them. He's like the best salesman, and so he trains all the recruits. So he's training her and also pursuing a romance with her. Well, that's putting it, like, kindly. And you're just kind of like, what's this guy's true motivation? How dangerous is he really? You know, how dangerous is this group? Like, you're kind of, like, somewhat uncomfortable most of the time going, like, all right, this can go – where is this going? And I'm going to save you all a lot of time and tell you right now, it's going absolutely fucking nowhere after 2 hours and 42 minutes.
Really?
Like, dude, it keeps, like, you're like, oh, it's building to something. It's building to something. Builds to nothing. And because of that, like, despite the fact that I thought it was, like, super interesting for, like, a good portion of it, almost 3 hour movie that has next to nothing to say and doesn't, like, even if it doesn't have anything to say, like, go somewhere. Give me some sort of plot development, something that happens near the end.
Right. Give some payoff for you giving your time.
In fact, the ending is, like, as such that, like, you will probably get, like, actively mad at the movie because you're going to go from going. I was literally, like, saying to my girlfriend, I'm like, this is all good and all, but it doesn't feel like it's going to go anywhere. I'm like, I'll bet you right now that this is not going to have an ending. And right as I said that, the credits started. It's like, I was upset with it. Like,
yeah.
Like, there's things about it that are respectable and they're interesting and good. Like, all things I just said to you. But at the end of the day, you're spending 3 hours with people who are pretty unlikable, watching them do, like, kind of unlikable things. And you kind of like the main character because she kind of seems like she has a heart. A terrible salesman, and she doesn't really develop much in the movie, and it doesn't come to anything. Like the end, like, dude, I fucking hate it. like, because there is no ending, really. I'm gonna give it 2 stars. It's a shame because there seems to be like something there, but like, fucking the ratio that we're used to now. Do that if you're really gonna make it this indie movie that goes nowhere. There's no reason it has to be that long. There's no reason,
right?
So,
well, that's disappointing.
Well, if you decide to ever check it out, you've been warned. You like know to expect.
I have so many films on my watch list that if I ever get to that one, I will have to have been really bored. Like,
I'm guessing I knocked it down a bit by telling you that, because like, and I'm not lying. I'm doing y'all a service here. I fucking sat through that shit for your benefit, so you know.
Jeff took one for the team, so
yeah. Nothing happens. Suck. I mean, it doesn't totally suck, but it sucks. 2 stars.
I sat down and watched Wishful Drinking earlier.
Yeah, the Carrie Fisher, like, one woman show.
Yeah, HBO has kind of like pushed it back to the top on their on HBO Go, like I logged in there and it was right at the front. And I had actually gone on there looking for it anyway. So, I'd never seen it. I've read the book that was based off of this show.
The show was based off the book or the other way?
No, it's the other way around. So she did this show and then she wrote the book.
Okay. All right. Interesting.
Based off it. She kind of chronicles her life basically. And does it in like a very amusing kind of way. It's not super funny. Actually, I think the book is a little better written, but it's also not like the book is, you know, not done in like an hour and 10 minutes either. So like there's a little more detail to it. There's, you know, a little more insight into stuff. She's a very smart, funny lady, or she was a very smart, funny lady. Very sarcastic, very biting type of humor. At one point she like talks about how, you know, this is when George Lucas still owned Star Wars, so she's talking about how basically like he owns her likeness. like she is marketed on everything. Like she's been soap, she's been action figures, she's been just like everything. And then she's like, well, at least like the one thing that they wouldn't be, that I wouldn't be, is like they didn't make a sex doll of me. And down from the ceiling comes like this.
I was gonna say, yeah,
sex doll.
For sure.
And she's like, yeah, well, when somebody tells me to go fuck myself, like just kind of like points at it. It's amusing. But having already known most of these details from having read her past books and, you know, having been a fan of hers for years, like it's not quite maybe as biting as it would have been, you know, when it debuted 6 years ago or 7 years ago. So it's definitely worth a go if you don't know a whole lot about Carrie Fisher. But I'm going to go 3 stars on it. But it's fun just to kind of see her kind of poke fun at herself and how she kind of rose to fame and how she was like famous before she was even born, really. Like,
I'm assuming she goes through like her battles with, you know, drugs and alcohol and stuff like that too.
She makes some jokes about how she starts off going like, "Hi, I'm Carrie Fisher. I'm an alcoholic." Like that's like her opening. Show. She talks a little bit about her pills. She talks about her stay in a psych ward, basically a mental hospital. She talks about how she's been receiving like the electro shock therapy.
Really?
Yeah. She goes into her marriage with like Paul Simon, like how he wrote songs about her. And
she was married to Paul Simon?
Yeah, for 2 years from 1986 to 1988. And then she had basically a breakdown in 1989. I mean, there are songs written about her and like she's like going over the lyrics. Basically, it's like there's like one that's basically like she's like, so I'm a bitch, right? That's what he's saying. And then there's like another one where it kind of goes along the lines of, I'm allergic to the woman I love. Like she drives me crazy. She's like, I don't know if I should have taken that as a compliment or not. And then like her second husband, who she has her daughter with, he turned gay, like not turned gay. He probably always was gay, but,
I would assume.
Yeah.
it's usually how that goes.
It's funny. Like there are funny bits in there, but if you already know most of that stuff, it's more just kind of seeing her poke fun at herself on stage and how she interacts with the crowd, and it's enjoyable enough.
I plan to check it out. I did not know that was on HBO, so I'll definitely check it out.
Yeah. And real quick, I saw Kingsglaive Final Fantasy 15.
Yeah, and? Movie of the year?
That is the wow. I don't know who the fuck that movie was made for.
I thought it was for people that wanted to know what was going on in the game of the year, Final Fantasy 15.
No.
Is that what it is? No.
Like there's like, so it's a 2-hour movie. There's like 10 or 15 minutes in it that kind of relates to the game. The rest of it is like, it takes place in that world and everything revolves around Noctis, who is the prince in the game that you play. He's the main character in Final Fantasy.
Uh-huh.
It revolves around his dad, but his dad is not really in the movie. Like, it just, everything revolves around him because all the power for these Kingsglaive people comes from him. But it doesn't really spend a whole lot of time with the characters from the game. So you just kind of get this understanding. Like
the first of the world.
Yeah. Like, and not even really well of the world. Like, it's so
just
weird.
Something else that's tangentially related.
Yeah. Like you kind of get a little bit of an understanding as to why Lucis, which is where, Noctis' dad reigned, why they were walled off, why the rest of that world, is kind of like a wasteland. It's such a weird movie.
That's something. The game doesn't explain that stuff. So
yeah, no, it's, you're just tossed into that. And so, like, where the game starts out with you getting into your car with your buddies, this all takes place in between there and the end of the prologue.
Okay.
Which, like, if you've played the game at all, like, his dad dies. His dad is killed in an attack. That whole sequence is in the movie, like the attack. But like why it's happening, I'm still not sure. I don't know. Like the movie is a shit show. It has a cast. Aaron Paul's in it. Lena Headley's in it.
Yeah, that's right.
Ron Bean, like it's crazy, but. Yeah, it's not good. It looks pretty. I'll give them that. Like, but, this is like the third Final Fantasy movie that is a giant shit show. So,
well, I mean, I am playing my very first Final Fantasy game here, which is Final Fantasy 15. I would not want to spend like time watching an actual movie of this shit. To each their own.
All right. So that's it. Do you have anything else?
I guess I'll wrap it up real quick with I finally saw a movie you reviewed a couple weeks back. And that's Rob Zombie's 31. it's basically a classic case of diminishing returns. It's like,
yeah,
it's Rob Zombie going, hey, remember when I made that movie that was pretty good called Devil's Rejects? I'm going to try to do that again. And, I forgot where you fall on it. I know you were not like super impressed by it, but I thought it was dog shit. And what the fuck, Rob Zombie?
Yeah,
I don't know if there's much more to say beyond it. Like it's just lazy as fuck. Like it's, and I can appreciate a simple premise. Like it's like a very much like Running Man type dealy. Like where it's like, hey, we're grabbing this group of people. They got to fight these maniacs and try to survive for 12 hours, but it's like it does nothing better than the movies that it's like derivative of. Like it's not better than The Purge, it's not better than The Running Man, it's not better than anything like that. And
no, all those are better movies.
If you it feels most like The Devil's Rejects. It really does feel like, honestly, like The Devil's Rejects. Like it feels like that's what the movie is. And like that movie, while like I'm of the opinion that like The Devil's Rejects is somehow like accidentally great because like we're almost like so bad it's great. I do think Devil's Rejects is close to being an actually great movie, and this is just dog shit. And like the people that you follow around suck. It doesn't have Sid Haig or Bill Moseley propping it up like Devil's Rejects had. Note for note, like it even ends with like a classic rock song as the characters go out, although like the ending of this was even less satisfying than Devil's Rejects. It's just the same thing, but just done way shittier. I think like the only positive thing I could say about it is the main bad guy, Doomhead. I found him, like the actor, to be like, seemed like he was giving it his all at the very least. Other than that, dude, oh my God, man.
And what bothers me about it is there's something there. There's a it's thread like, that could be good.
It could be like I said, like I love that basic premise. It's fun. Like that's a setting example for a fun movie. Dumb, like the but weird, fun.
Like I love the weird like Malcolm McDowell aristocratic thing going on. Like
it's like the Purge though. It's like he's ripping off the Purge. It's like the same thing. Like where they have like the rich Republicans that
will sit
in like a dining hall and do that.
Like I wanted more understanding of why they're doing it, where they're coming from. Instead, it's just like we're gonna dress them up like fools, and here's some allegory.
Not that you need like a ton. Like I get it. Like a lot of horror movies. A lot of horror movies though. There are sick fucked up people in the world.
Sure.
Okay. But like this, there's like no. You don't even get a sense that they're like the rich people or like what the deal is. Like if they're getting off on watching, they're just kind of like we're placing bets and
right and
we got to change. We got to recalculate the odds. Every time you said that, I wanted to fucking die laughing. I'm like, come on, are you fucking serious?
And then it turns out that they're really just betting with themselves. Like
yeah,
like it's like huh? Like it would make sense if it was like some sort of weird like hostile thing where it's
Like there's a business behind it. Yeah, like people are making money off this. Like
anything would have.
Literally anything.
A little bit.
There's nothing there.
Right. Nothing like it's like it's just like, we've dressed these people up like clowns or Nazis or whatever. And for no apparent reason. Like and we don't like there's no reason for anything in this movie.
No, and like I said, like without Sid Haig or Bill Moseley like propping this up, like the people that we're left with, like the carnies that we're supposed to care about. Not at all. Like, in fact, I was surprised the Jamaican guy survived so long because I couldn't understand what the hell he was saying. Like, I didn't like anyone in this. Like, Sherry Moon is front and center, which, like, I don't hate her as much as some people, but, like, come on, dude. Like, come the fuck on. Stop with this shit.
Right, like she
does not deserve to make money anymore. I'm sorry. Like,
she was decent enough in The Lords of Salem. Like
that's where I was like most kind of impressed with her because she was doing an actual like role like right. They were, you know like
but in this she's basically just playing same old shit. Yeah like and oh it's
the ending sucked ass too like what was that I don't know you probably already forgot the goddamn ending like it's movie fucking sucked and the star rating I was gonna go 2 but fuck this I do not approve I'm going 1 star. Rob Zombie, dude, you need to really step it up, get a fucking writing partner, and really think about whether you want to keep doing this or not. Because if all you're going to do is this, we have The Devil's Rejects, and it's a great movie. Like, we don't need you to, like, keep embarrassing yourself. Like, I almost feel... I don't know. I was about to go on a rant about Kevin Smith, but, like, I can't even loop... Like, I can't put Kevin Smith in the same... bucket as him. Like Kevin Smith at the very least was at some point a great writer. Like this guy has yet to prove himself. And I don't know. Fuck you, dude. I'm not watching any more. Well, I guess I'll watch more of the movies like because I have a weird fascination. Like he was almost there. Like 10 years ago he was almost there with that fucking Devil's Rejects movie and like and, you know, Lords of Salem, while I had major problems with it, like, it was a good sign that he was maturing in it, but, like, this is just right back to the well.
And I don't want to spend too much more time on this, but I do wonder if because that was such a critical and commercial bomb that he just went back to the well. Like, no, you know what? I'm going back to Hillbillies and Hicks and like...
I heard that he purposely did do that because that's what the fans, the quote-unquote fans want. But it's like, yeah, you might have, a 100,000 hardcore fans out there that, like, love that type of shit. But if you develop as an artist, you will have way more fans. That's what I would say to him. Like,
great. And he should know that.
Yeah, he should. But I don't know. Like, I don't have like a lot of confidence in him as a writer. Like, I don't think he. I think he like gets like he has some visual stuff even in this movie that was cool. But like there's a part where they're walking down a hallway and they're walking in a room. And there's like a light above the room that says "Wet Kitty." And like the painting on the wall is like these legs that are spread. Like it's a great visual. Like that's creative.
Well,
but you need to marry that with a script.
I don't think anybody would ever take away would ever say that the guy is not creative. I mean, like he's had, you know, what, 30 years doing creative shit. Just he can't seem to get it all together at once anymore.
He's got an eye for things like there's like even like little things in this, like this one, like I like there's like a diorama thing where there's like a play going on and like all the dolls on the stage look like creepy. Like he's got an eye for old, weird, creepy shit.
Yeah.
And he knows what these old like 70s horror movies look like. Capture the soul of any of it ever almost. Like, and his just dialogue and everything is just laughable every time. Like, this movie, I could have written, I honest to God, I could have written this movie in a day. I'm wondering, like, well, shit, dude, he probably made fucking like at least $1 million off this or something. I could have done this, dude. Anybody could have done this. Like, I'm sorry. It's just, it's embarrassing. So,
yes.
Well, do better.
Do better, Rob Zombie.
Get a writer.
and that.
It's okay. It's okay. Seth Rogen has Evan Goldberg like in the shadows. You get your guy in the shadows that's fucking making you look good, bro.
Oh well.
All right. So, next week, I don't know if we'll have any movies. I'll have seen some stuff, but we're gonna do our top tens of the year.
Yes.
Probably throw in some honorable mentions too, because I know we couldn't fit everything we like on there. Also, Chris, come prepared with your worst movie of the year.
Okay. I think I can.
All right. So get excited. Our big year-end episode is coming a couple of weeks late, but you know, we try to give us time to catch up.
Yeah, next week. All right. We'll be back then.
Movie dudes.
Do 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 do.